Welcome to Nodcast, episode 260, Murray Purry Furfox.
So, Murray Purry Furfox, go!
Yep. So to all three of you who bothered to check this out from /MLP, yes, we saw the thread, yes, we saw what old Drafty Coon was saying. If it was even him.
Wait, is he a raccoon character now?
No.
Is this because of Guardians of the Galaxy being so big? I don't know anything about Animu, so you'll have to...
It's a diminutive.
Oh, okay. All right.
And...
Not like... So I am like Sensei Fuzzwolf, because I'm not a diminutive. I don't know.
Yeah, coon in regards to little boy. Anyway,
I thought that was a southern U.S.
No, K-10.
It's dash K-U-N, not... Shut up, Fuzz. You fur fuck.
I didn't know that Final Jump was a poor little black Jewish boy.
You know, he just keeps piling on the oppression, you know. He's trying so hard, bless his heart.
Oh, bless his heart. Pat, pat, pat.
Which is Texan for fuck you.
Yes.
Yeah. Bless his heart.
Well, I'm sure that his... he'll be thoroughly reamed by Adobe and the Business Software Alliance after the bullshit they've been pulling. Having cracked copies of Adobe software sitting in a down in a tool slash download directory for two fucking years. Imagine the head bobs here.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, anyways, I'm Saverin.
I'm Wolf. I'm Fuzz Wolf.
And I'm Shiva.
Yep. And for the people that are new to this show, we are a sex and relationship advice podcast for the furry community. We've been going since 2008. And, yeah, this is episode 260. Like, we're going to fucking stop this. The ride never ends.
It just gets weirder.
Yes, it does.
grow more and more orify.
Yep. It's been, like, 3 weeks since you recorded at this point.
Let's see. Cons, sick.
Cons. You were sick. Fuzz got married. We went to Denver.
I got married to my prearranged Indian bride.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell Tyrion you called him that.
I wasn't talking about Tyrion. Tyrion's my bit on the side.
Oh, my.
Dear Tyrion, I did not know that you were an Indian bride.
what are your parents like arranged for us to get married? We're going to arrange a gay marriage. Think of the grandchildren.
But babies for everybody.
Secret. They don't want grandchildren.
Yeah, I guess that.
So, yeah, why don't you just tell us about your gay wolf wedding?
I think... At least one of us did hashtag that on Twitter. It's hashtag gay wolf wedding.
Yeah.
I think it was you.
I think it was me, and then some of my other friends started using it. So that was the end of July. So it was Thursday the 31st. We flew out there. We're staying with Kyle Gold and his husband, Kit, and because Kyle was performing the ceremony for us. And... We had a nice, relaxing couple of days, just kind of hanging out. Like, on the Friday, we went driving up and down the coast. Mm-hmm. Went to, what's the name of the place? Ah, my brain is... It was down on the coast. Probably Santa something.
Santa Barbara?
No. And Santa Monica's in SoCal.
Yeah, I don't know.
Santa Cruz, maybe?
Sure.
Okay, yeah, it was Santa something. There was a boardwalk. That was kind of cool. We got to see the Pacific Ocean for the first time. Walked on sand for the first time since I probably visited Florida at some point. Because I forgot how difficult it is to walk on sand.
I was going to say, the first time you walked on sand since you jumped off the boat and swam ashore...
that would be a bitch of a swim from Scotland.
Yeah.
Cubans have it so much easier.
Not to deal with the Turks.
But what we did, we went down to this little area that you could see the Golden Gate Bridge in the background. It was Ghirardelli Plaza, but it was actually a Ghirardelli chocolate factory.
Oh, nice.
There. And, you know, we'd had lunch and we went in there and we had some shakes. I actually took a couple of videos on my camera of the big ass barrels with the stirring thing of chocolate. I was going to show my sister. She's kind of a chocolate fiend, but it's actually kind of neat. And, you know, it was right there on the bay. You know, there was a little beach. It was kind of a cloudy, overcast day, so it was like perfect weather because it was kind of cool. And not freezing cold and not blazing hot. So we eventually, once everybody was there, we walked out onto the pier. And there was this little nook off to the side, which was convenient because we could stand there and do the ceremony and not be right in the way of everybody walking back and forth and stuff. Because it was a Saturday. It was pretty busy. And... I was going to say something else. Anyway, so we're standing there, and let's see, it was me and Tyrion, Kit and Kyle, Rikoshi, Zia, Buck. I don't want to leave anybody out. I think that was everybody that was actually at the ceremony, because it was just as for the legal part, so it was kind of, it was on the smaller side, and just with some of the folks there out in Cali, and like everybody had cameras and stuff like that, and I found myself sort of getting real tunnel vision when we were doing the ceremony. Like, I was so focused on Tyrion that I didn't really see anything around me. And then when the ceremony was done and Tyrion and I are hugging, and he says into my ear, "We've got an audience." And I turned around, and there was like three or four random people had just stopped and watched the ceremony, and they started clapping for us.
Aww.
It was really sweet. And you know, something I was going to mention is this whole process where we'd gone down to the civic office to get the paperwork, and we'd gone out there, and like, nobody looked at us askance, you know. Nobody thought it was weird or anything. Like, I mean, yeah, I know they've been doing gay weddings there for a couple of years now, but it's just...
They didn't, like, check and make sure that you weren't furries or anything?
Yeah. It was just really nice that it was, like, we were just treated like anybody else.
Just normal dudes.
Yeah, just normal people that were going to go and get married. And to have just random people be, like, happy for us, mm-hmm. you know, and it was just... Oh, it was really nice. It kind of made me think of how far we've come in acceptance of gay couples and same-sex marriage. And so that was really nice.
Just random passerbys clap mm-hmm. you on.
Yeah. And whoever had my camera, Ricky, I think, got a couple pictures of the audience that was there. And then we got some nice pictures of the whole group standing and stuff. But, yeah, like... The photos of us doing the wedding, the Golden Gate is in the background. So
that's neat.
It's actually pretty cool. You know, and we all hugged and everything. It was short but sweet, you know. If you want a good wedding ceremony, get a writer to write mm-hmm, your mm-hmm. Wedding ceremony for you.
Yeah, but the twist in Act 3 is, oh, it's Tyrion is actually your sister.
And then the gun comes out. And, oh! So we're legally married now and have been since July 31st, but we're also doing our main wedding ceremony here in Texas on August 31st.
With everybody,
where we'll have like 100 people at it and an open bar and lots of pasta. So that'll be our what we consider our actual anniversary. The San Francisco one was just getting the...
legal part done, because
the legal
Texas.
Part done. And, yeah, and, you know, originally I was thinking, okay, this is just the legal part. It'll just, like, we'll go, it'll be a simple thing, and then we'll...
And
it'll
no,
just
it
be
matters.
Sort of a rubber stamp, and, you know, and we're done. But, like, I was actually, like, feeling all the love and everything, you know? Like, it was like, oh, my God, this is, like, a real thing. And I'm walking around. And we've been wearing our wedding rings for 13 months because we proposed to each other in June of 2013. Mm-hmm. And so we'd taken them off that day and put them in their ring boxes so that we could actually put them on each other's ring fingers in the ceremony.
And it feels naked when you don't have your ring on.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, for the first time in over a year.
Do you have the ring groove in your finger?
It's starting a little bit.
You're starting to get the ring groove.
I take it off like at least a couple times a day because it bugs me when it's slightly loose. Mm-hmm. And it bugs me if I wash my hands and water gets under it. So I'll take it off to dry my finger and then pop it back on. So I imagine I'd get more of a finger groove if I kept it on there forever.
Well, I would take mine off to, like, do anything messy with food. So I'd take it off, you know.
But, like, yeah, walking around that day, and I would check my hand and be in a panic because I didn't see it. And then I would remember that it was in Tieran's pocket in its box. And just, yeah, my hand has gotten so used to, my finger have gotten so used to feeling a ring on it that it just felt really weird for a day. And I felt strangely disconnected, like it wasn't right. Like, even after wearing it all this time, it's like I still look down on it. And
you fiddle with it.
It's like, well, I fiddle with it, but it's like I feel that connection, you know. I get the warm fuzzies, and it's like this symbol of my love and my union, and it's just, I guess it's easy to be kind of cavalier about it and be like, oh, weddings, whatever, you know, when you're younger and stuff, but, you know, when you really love someone and you've been together a long time and then you actually do this ceremony, it's like, it really does matter, even though we've been together all these years and we've been living together all these years, and we've bought a house together. It's changed everything and nothing at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a different feeling. You know, and it meant a lot to have our friends there and everything. So I can imagine it's going to be really cool when we have the next big ceremony. But God, I feel like I had so much more to say on that. But it's like, That was pretty much it. The rest of the time, we had a couple of nice meals with friends. Oh, actually, after the ceremony in the evening, we had reserved a table for 20 at this Italian restaurant out there. It wasn't Maggiano's. It was somewhere else. It was local to California.
I'm getting the feeling you like Italian, Buzz.
Actually, I like Italian pretty much, but Tieran loves Italian. And, like, it was like he invited all these people that we knew out in the bay. And that was in the evening, so more people could come to it. But, like, they ended up giving us, like, one of the big banquet rooms because that was just easier than pushing, like, five tables together, you know?
Makes sense, especially if it's not already booked.
But, yeah. It basically, he secured the space. And that was really nice because he got to see a lot of folks out there that we hadn't seen in a little while. And just a really nice time, everybody being happy for us and everything. And what's cool is there was, like, it's California. So there was, like, three or four other married gay couples there at dinner with us. And it was just kind of like, I don't know, sort of a feeling of belonging, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it was really nice. I enjoyed it. Tieran and I are still so in love. You know, you guys can vomit if you want, or say aw, you know, depending
us
on
us or your listener.
Or the listeners. You know, I'm pretty sure you guys aren't like, ooh, gross, gays, or lovey dovey stuff, but yeah. And so we got home Sunday because we didn't have much, we had to take a couple of days off because the marriage license place was only open during business hours or during the week because it's a government office. Mm-hmm. So we flew out there Thursday. We came home Sunday because neither of us have much time off with all the cons we go to. Then I had a 3-day work week. And then Wednesday, or Thursday morning, Savrin and I headed out for Rocky Mountain Fur Con. So I was out of town 2 weeks in a row. 2 weeks in a row, I had 3-day work weeks. And, you know, like Savrin said to me earlier today in a text, is like I kept thinking it was Wednesday because not being home on Monday was like threw the week off. And I was like, yeah, my sense of time is entirely fucked up now.
It's like, oh yeah, it's Thursday. Yeah. We have a thing that we do on Thursday.
Just
because
of all the traveling I've done, and it's been like 3 weeks since we recorded and stuff, so.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least that I've recorded with you guys.
We've got a fuckload of emails, too.
Yeah.
We have the last one, the oldest one's from the 26th.
Jesus. So that was my time. I'll let Savern talk about RMFC if you want to talk about the con.
So RMFC was a con. Unfortunately, I don't really know anybody over there.
Mm-hmm.
It was cool, though. We did meet some fans.
Yeah, it was kind of nice. I felt like we met a bunch of fans this con. Like,
yeah, it was really cool. I liked it. And you know, it's like, oh, you're that Savern. Yes, I am that Savern.
Yeah.
That Savern.
I was in the elevator going up to our room at one point, and, you know, guy gets on the floor before, is standing in front of me, and as you do when you're at FurCons and you're in the elevator, and you just kind of look straight ahead at the person, and you look at their badge, because everyone is wearing their badges around their neck or something like that. And just as the elevator doors are opening, he goes, oh, hey, I love your podcast. And then he left for his floor. And yeah. I was like, ha, cool.
Just out of nowhere. Oh, hey, yeah. I like your shit.
Yeah, yeah, just randomly. So, I mean, that was nice. We had quite a few people mention the show, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, we're fur fag infamous.
Oh, and I had a super fan. Like,
Dude was like, oh, my God, I got to meet you. This guy was, like, fucking hopping in place.
Yeah.
He got your book and got it signed. And
he was really, really happy. He said he'd been a fan of my stories for a long time. So it's kind of cool. It's a real novelty for me to see somebody like that excited to meet me.
Yeah,
you know?
It's like, I'm just this dude. But to that guy, you're the dude.
I'm the Fuzzwolf. But no, I mean, that was really cool. It's not something I get to experience often. And so it was pretty nice. Like, yeah, dude was super excited.
Beyond that, went in Denver, do as Denverites do. Had some mind-expanding experiences while there, and...
And you may have recorded a podcast while there.
Yeah, unfortunately, through some feat of technology, that podcast got lost.
Oh,
what a shame.
Why do I sense sarcasm?
Were you that bad on it?
I don't think so.
That your co-host was just like, I can't use this. Just delete.
No, it was actually did the SD card filled up.
Whoops, and then the crashing sound of his laptop leaving the apartment.
My laptop just flew out the window because my co-host was high as a fucking kite. Legally. So that was kind of the highlight, I guess, because, again, RMFC is not that big a con. It's only about 1,300 people this year. Only. I mean, that still makes it a pretty big furry con. That's actually not that far behind Furry Fiesta, really.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a really nice new venue.
Oh, their new venue is super nice.
And should provide them plenty of room for growth.
Yeah, yeah.
But I guess I just need to be more active in the furry community because I didn't really know anybody up there. It was the only people I saw were people like that I knew. Like Sophie Copper was there. I said hi to her. Zia was there.
Yeah, who you worked with all weekend. So.
Yeah, there's just not a lot of people that I know in that area.
I knew a good handful of people, but
Ides.
Yeah. Every night, though, I crashed really hard,
you know? We didn't do anything party hard at
all. Three of us were in bed by 10 o'clock every night.
You know? It was...
That's
it was,
how hardcore conventioning we are.
Well, I do think a bit of it is the whole, congratulations, you're now a mile in the atmosphere.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think the altitude change affected Savern and I quite a bit.
Oh?
Well, the thinner atmosphere at mile high, and it can make your body ache. You need to drink a lot of liquid.
And I totally did that.
A lot of water, unless you end up with an absolutely splitting headache.
Oh.
And if you drink anything, it affects you like 10 times harder. Like, if you drink alcohol, I mean...
If you're not used to that altitude.
Yeah. Right, yeah. So they say it takes like a couple weeks for your body to kind of acclimate to it, But I am never in Colorado for long enough for that to happen. So it's always feels like a bitch and a half.
Yeah, because like day one, I was like, I'm going to walk to McDonald's because I didn't feel like, you know, doing the $15 hotel restaurant or whatever. I was like, I'm just going to spend a couple bucks, walk to the local McDonald's, grab some small. And it was only like a mile round trip, but I felt awful afterwards. I was like, what the hell?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's just it's a little bit harder up there.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyways, I mean, the con was great. They didn't seem to have any fires that I saw. The attendees were happy, and they raised like $5,000 for charity. So
yeah,
GG to them.
Yep, you know, pretty much.
May or may not go back next year, but you know, at least I can say I've been to that con now.
Yeah,
woo! I need to hit Rainforest at one point.
That'll be that's my next con actually is Rainforest in 6 weeks. I said that to Tieran today, and he's like, "Oh God, is it that soon?" And I was like, "Yeah, it's the middle of September. We're in the middle of August. It's 6 weeks."
Then you have MFF after that one.
No, because MFF isn't until December.
Oh really? Wow.
Yeah, it was Thanksgiving weekend weekend before Thanksgiving. Excuse me, for years and years and years, and they actually pushed it back due to negotiations with their hotel. So now they're like December, like 4th through 6th. So they're a little later in the year now. But even if they had still been in November, we've got other cons before that.
Yeah.
There's Central Plains Fur Con is in November, early November, up in Wichita, Kansas. Can't Make Arizona Fur Con. It's a Halloween weekend for anyone that can get to the Phoenix, Scottsdale, Arizona area. It was a fun con last year. I need to let them know it looks like nobody from Fur Planet probably has the time off available to go and do it this year. But
it's also like the week after OklaCon.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, OklaCon's the 24th, 26th of October this year.
Yeah, but this is like
to go again.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Arizona is the week.
Schedule something to conflict with that.
Yeah, that wasn't intentional. It sucks.
But. Yeah, but so I'll be hopefully going to Central Plains as planned, and then Tieran will be going to Midwest Fur Fest.
Cool.
So, and of course Rainforest before that.
Yeah. So. I'd like to make that con. Seattle's really, really pretty, but not this year.
Pardon me a sec. I gotta step away for a moment.
Okay. So we're gonna go ahead and start reading a couple of emails.
Yay, emails!
Because holy crap, we have a ton of them. So
some of them are really quick.
Yeah, a lot of them are really quick. We did have a theme of dumb questions you felt were too stupid to ask, and we told people to send them in anonymously. So because we said that we would treat all emails for a given show anonymously, we're gonna do that this week. Unless the person's like specifically like, hey, I'm blah.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it in the spirit of things. But we will answer as many of these as we possibly can. So I'm just going to start from the bottom because the first one should just get us off on a great footing.
Hello, Notcasters. This is our first email. I'm going to guess that you've received a number of emails on this topic already since we Canadians are... We're doing good tonight. Since we Canadians are congenially incapable of staying silent when our country is ever mentioned in public, usually there's a squee followed by the disingenuous, humble refrain, "That's Canadian." Savin commented in episode 258, Ball Pit, that Canadians are less apt to go on long road trips than Americans are, suggesting that the way Canada's population spread out makes it less practical. Did we say that?
I said the people that I talked to mainly were that way. I didn't say in general.
You've spoken to every Canadian.
That's not true at all. The Canadians built the Transcontinental Railroad. This is fucking Canada.
I was going to say the denizens of Vancouver.
You should listen to that Gordon Lightfoot song, eh? Tell you all about the pioneering spirit of the noble Canadian race.
Just continue.
I was surprised because apparently we were too. I didn't know Severin had taken a poll of all Canadians.
Yes.
I was surprised.
He may have taken some Canadians' polls.
I was going to say that's much more likely. I was surprised because my experience is very different, maybe very difficult too, but very different. And perhaps Severin's Canadian acquaintances live in different circumstances than mine.
They all po.
It's certainly uncommon.
They're like, I ride my bike to Anthrocon. What you talking about?
It's certainly uncommon for Canadians to road trip right across the country. Western and Eastern Canada feel like separate worlds in some ways, usually only crossed by plane. But bear in mind that most of the population lives quite close to the U.S. border, which makes for a lot of road trip destinations. Also, flying is a bit spendier here than the U.S., which, if anything, makes driving more attractive. I live in Edmonton, which is a tad more isolated than most big cities in Canada, but the first here are eager road trippers. Calgary and Edmonton are 186 miles apart, but well enough connected that the furs... I'm glad he translated into miles for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He translated to Americlap.
Yeah, I know. But well enough connected that the furs on events put together... furs put on events together throughout the year because of that corridor is considered a day trip. There are also regular trips to Banff and Jasper for skiing and camping, 230 to 260 miles. Vancouver for Halloween and Vancouver, 720 miles, and SeaTac for Rainverse, 789. My understanding for friends in Vancouver is that driving to Seattle, which is 150 miles, is a regular activity called shopping. My mate and I are big fans of road trip holidays. We did a loop through Anchorage, Alaska a few years ago, which is 5,000 miles, and visited Yellowstone last month, which is 1,800 miles. Anyway, just my personal experience. I'm curious if anyone else writes in with their two cents. Great podcast as always. I'm a longtime listener and always enjoy tea time with the Notcasters. Take care. And as we're doing
Anon this week.
Yeah. Right. I don't know why it didn't occur to me when you were saying that, because I was like, we know people that live in Calgary who have driven to Pittsburgh to go to Anthrocon. And that's like 4,000 miles.
Not really.
Man, are their sled dogs tired?
The people that I talked to the week before the show when I was in Houston were really kind of surprised that we would drive the hundreds of miles from Dallas to Houston.
Yeah, it was the same people that were bitching about how they didn't have a con in Houston. And it's like, I'm sorry... Dallas were the first people that got off their asses and did one.
These are people from Canada, professionals, and they were just like, they don't drive. They're not furries. They're not road trippers. They're professional adults who fly all over the country for like con appearances.
Okay.
And they were like, that was what I was saying. So there's that.
Is that hashtag professional, professional TM, or quote mark professional?
Professional TM.
Okay.
Peoples.
They get paid to do it?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, there's hashtag professional, which isn't professional at all. There's actual professional TM, which is the actually professional people, and the quotation mark professionals.
Yeah.
I think we fall into the third category.
Like we're a professional dick
sucker.
Well,
we've gotten some money for it, so I don't know how that counts anymore.
Very, very technically, we are professionals.
Get some of that podcast pussy.
I haven't.
Money.
Hey, you know, we'll share it with you. We'll be like, we got you some pie.
Hey, all I gotta say is we've made more money doing this show than certain groups ever have in their entirety.
Uh-huh. That's kind of sad, considering what we've brought in is...
It ain't shit.
Yeah.
Like bitches.
Yeah. All right, so I'll read the next one. So, okay, let's see.
It's the next one. It's not hard. Rate it.
No,
rate
it. I'm just making sure how see how long it is.
Exterminate!
Hello again, Notcasters. I wanted to say really quick that I heard and have thought about your advice you gave in episode 257 regarding my situation with my friend in Northern California, and I agree that trying to drive 6 hours north from my home in LA to get him off his ass wouldn't really help anything. Not that it wouldn't be possible for me to do either, as I don't have a car right now. I'm just sending you this message to follow up and ask some advice for a second pretty ugly situation that pushed its head up recently.
I was going to say, push his hat my ass recently.
Oh, my. There's a friend of mine who I've known for a good 2 years who I had a brief month-long crush with that was giving me serious headache to deal with. To start off, he's been on and off heroin and a lot of other really nasty drugs for as long as I've known him, and it's really hard to deal with him because whenever he texts me, he's either horny as hell, affectionate, and probably stoned, or depressed and down on himself, probably due to him not having any.
We're okay with heroin on this show because we really believe in women taking a leading role, and especially in science fiction and fantasy.
Okay, I was like, what the fuck are you... Oh,
heroin.
Yeah, the hard part is he's still really young at 17. He's intelligent and sweet and always keen to help me through any problems I've had. That being said, I just don't know how to deal with him. He's considerate and sweet to me, and even though I'm desperate, and even desperate to be in contact sometimes, I feel guilty when I ignore his texts, which at times can be very suggestive of affection, but it also makes me uncomfortable because I'm trying to nurture my relationship with my mate, who I've been with a long distance for almost a year. My mate recently spent a week with me and has since had to go back home to Michigan, so I'm already in a bit of a sensitive state from getting used to being long distance again. I am really turned off by my friend's antics between him going in and out of rehab and relapse and by his going on and calling me his tiger and stuff like that. He assures me that he is not romantic, but he seems desperate to please me and has a massively low opinion of himself, which I've been trying and failing to help. It's gotten to the point where it is, despite the fact that he really cares about me and occasionally is nice to be around, I feel like I need to help with his problems because of this and because of how much care goes into how he handles things with me. I feel like I'm in a toxic situation, though, because he keeps setting himself up for failure and disappointing me with every occasion I've tried to help. I still can't help but feel guilty when I ignore him and come to the conclusion that I really should either stay there as things are or break things off entirely. I'm frankly not too enthused with either possibility because he's an enigma to deal with, yet I'm his only real friend, according to him. Do you guys think I should keep helping this poor guy and deal with all the stress and irritation of being disappointed by someone I should have faith in, or should I just tell him to go away and live with the guilt that I cut off his only meaningful friendship? I've honestly been really torn about this problem for months. I guess this is what I get for being a counselor of furries. Sorry for the wall of text. Steve will probably have to take this one again.
Nope.
So, you've got a stoner, tweaker, drug addict friend who's not even a legal adult yet.
His parents need to get him into rehab while he's still young enough to be under their control.
Yeah, because the moment he hits 18, he gets picked up, taken in, he's going to be in federal pound you in the ass prison forever.
Yeah.
This is not a problem you should be in this situation to fix for him.
This needs to be his parents. And if his parents aren't in the situation to do it, you still don't want to get caught up with it, because presumably you're an adult. Yeah, you don't want to get caught up in drugs and shit. And, you know, they're associated to hard-ass penalties for the hard and nasty stuff. You know.
Yeah, I would get out of this situation or, you know, maybe try to get somebody in his family involved to get him some help.
Because, yeah, this is not a situation you want to get neck-deep into. And as much as it'll make you feel guilty...
That and the whole what was he, tiger?
Your tiger.
I mean, that...
You don't want to be collateral when he does inevitably crash.
Yeah. And also, if he knows that you've got a mate that you're serious about, then...
Calling it your tiger is kind of crossing boundaries.
Yeah, that's not cool.
That's an endearment you use with a mate.
Yeah, and if you're uncomfortable... Tell him you're uncomfortable, and you know, and if he still does it, I mean, that's basically crossing into harassment at that point, and that's another good reason to back off and not be involved in this situation. But that's just my opinion, man. So next one, or did anybody have anything to?
No, that's about the end. Kind of.
Okay,
it's the highlight of email.
All right. Okay. Huh. That's interesting. I don't hear the background noise anymore.
Well, the air conditioner turned off.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay, my bad. Notcast listener email. Howdy to whom reads this. I'm a new listener currently listening to episode 12.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's a long time ago.
He hasn't even met me yet.
No. Trying to catch up to the present. Travel in time. You can reach us. Also, I'd like to apologize in advance if the podcast dynamics change after 200-plus episodes.
It has.
If still read listeners' emails, we do, I would like to give some of my personal experiences and ask a question. With the furry demographic, I started out in my youth as a troll who pretended to be a jackalope and caused havoc and arguments within that community. But when I grew up, I realized that furries are just chill people who don't deserve the extra hardships and pain. And now I'm more or less a closeted furry who just want to accept everyone. Also, recently consciously became friendless after my former friend proudly stated that he stabbed a gay person for hitting on him, and my former group of friends' general consensus was the right decision. Yes, I was that stereotype that was part of the masculine alpha group who were douches. The no homo sapien.
But, no homo sapien.
Yes, but was smart enough to leave that life because I didn't want to die. My past experiences have shown that fan communities shun those who are not in the loop or within, bicker between them about which subgroup is better. My question is, how would a furry noob get jumped in and be part of the fun?
Participate without me a troll and an asshole? Log on to FA, comment on some nice art, log into some of the forums, start chatting about video games or movies or computer hardware or whatever your interest is.
Furries are very nerdy, so, I mean, if you're into movies or video games at all, you know, you'd probably be able to hit some commonalities with people and be able to make some friends.
When in doubt, always look for your local furry group online. There are usually Facebook pages, usually forums and whatnot. Every state pretty much has their own, like, furry forums. You know, Texas has Lone Star Furs, and Florida Furs, etc. So, I mean, you know, your best bet is to try plugging into your local community and meeting some people and, you know, not being a scary douchebag.
Wyoming Furs. Hello!
Wyoming Fur. before we get several angry furs, there's like three of us!
We're sorry, Wyoming Fur.
Singular again.
They have to go to Utah.
Yeah. Actually, there's quite a few people in Utah.
Yeah.
The SLC Furs. Oh, an Unthrocon is coming up. Yep. In the not too distant future.
I love their mascot, the Utah Raptor.
Oh, is it?
Mm-hmm. It's a raptor. Oh. Cool. It's like, we got a fucking dinosaur.
To be fair, that's a pretty
awesome. I
thought
their mascot was Margaret Cho.
After the last. Yeah. That was still fucking cool to have Margaret fucking Cho walk up and go, sup. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, y'all are people. Let's check this thing out.
Yeah.
Alright. So, yeah, just. Basically, that's about it. You get the con report.
And I get to talk. I'm sorry.
You got to talk before.
You get to talk some more.
All right. So, Megaplex con report from a first-time congoer. Oh, so we've got a virgin. Let's see.
The lipstick, write the V on his forehead. One of us.
No, that's when he becomes staff. Dear Notcast crew, I attended Megaplex 13 in Orlando during the last week in July. The con had 1,281 attendees, which is a 50% increase over last year. Holy fuck, those four staff.
It's like a real con now, yay!
I mean, can you imagine Fiesta doubling? Holy crow.
Actually, doubling would be 100%
increase. Well, you know, still going up another, you know.
0.5, yeah. Because that would be what, like, 2,300, 2,400, something like that.
Well, we did 23% last year, so still even more. Anywho, for me, it was my first furry con after 16 years, mostly spent lurking in the fandom. Yes, I know that going to a large con as your first is a bad idea. To be fair, it probably wasn't that big when you started planning. So, I mean, they did significantly jump. And I didn't know anyone else was going, which made it a doubly bad idea to go. But with that said, I had a great time. The hotel was large and well air-conditioned, with plenty of amenities and food options within walking distance. The con staff were well organized and efficient, and the attendees were super friendly, even to a newcomer like myself. I have to admit, the first hour was overwhelming. Until then, furry had been an internet-only thing for me. Yet here were hundreds of people openly talking about it, acting it out, wearing tails, and for someone not accustomed to their presence, the fursuits were almost surreal. One of the first things I did after checking in was head over to the coming out of the suitcase panel. It was a support group of sorts for people who keep their furry life separate from their real life. The panel was a cathartic experience. There was one person there compared lurking in the fandom to being outside the window of a fun party looking in. That comment struck a chord with me. The panel was also a great way to meet other new congoers. I became fast friends with... What are you doing?
I'm cutting through Saren's XLR cable because foxes don't need to speak.
Oh, I'm like, what are you doing?
You randomly have a pair of scissors on the podcast.
Yes.
They've been here for like 3 weeks.
I haven't been here for 3 weeks.
Well, they're for emergency circumcisions.
They get to keep the tips.
If you rub it, it turns into a wallet.
Anyway, the panel was also a great way to meet other new congoers. I became fast friends with the two panel hosts, and we had dinner together afterwards. I also got to meet Bucktown Tiger. He's super friendly, and he put on a great musical performance while in suit. It was damn funny seeing the reaction after he started playing the Be Prepared from The Lion King. Cool. Audience members quoted the entire scene verbatim, precisely imitating the characters' voices and inflections. Only at a furry con, someone in the commented musically.
Nice.
Uncle Kage was on hand to run the charity auction and to do his namesake story hour. The Japanese game show and fursuit games were a blast. In no particular order, the other con highlights for me were the amazing character sketch I got from Final Flight, getting to hold a baby bobcat at the charity presentation. Now that would be super cute.
Mm-hmm.
One of my new friends showing me how a fursuit is constructed and letting me try on his pants on his suit. On the flip side, I didn't see any major problems worth criticizing. Just a few nitpicks. The main parking lot was very tight, although there was plenty of space in the overflow lot. The con had literary panels, but no lit vendors in attendance. I'm looking at you, Fuzz. And the Smash Brothers tournaments, which hit its 32-player limit, only had 5 or 6 GameCube controllers. But all
That's
these,
bullshit!
But all of these are minor problems. It was, as said, a very well-run con. All told, I had an amazing experience at Megaplex. I highly recommend this con. Sorry for the wall of text, especially Shiva is the one reading this. You're most sincerely anonymous.
Cool. Thank you.
Sounds like they had a fun time.
Yes. Good first con experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's always good for first timers to have a good experience because, you know, it means mm-hmm. they'll go to more.
Yeah.
It means they'll never escape.
At least until they hit escape velocity.
So, here's a question.
I think that's called
kids.
It's going
to be full of drama. What the fuck is a circle? Asked Anonymous.
What the fuck is a semiflange?
It's somebody's created race like checkouts
it's
or...
Is it Mark Molino?
I don't know who created circles.
I'm going to look that shit up.
Look that up on Wikipedia or Wikifurio.
A circle is a fictional... species created by Trancy Mick. A circle is a creature native to the planet of Violus, who lives in the continent of Violus. People often mistake of calling them hybrids. They are not. They are a species of their own right, not a combination of other animals.
So, I mean, it's kind of like the way people started playing Citra characters. It's a species created by a furry.
Or what's the name of the weasels that have the antennae? I forget what they're called. They were popular a couple of years ago.
Shoot. Skiltair?
Yeah, Skiltair.
Oh, that's Merlino.
Yeah, and that's a lot older than a few years ago.
Yeah, but they were more popular. I meant they were popular a few years ago. They've kind of died off in recent years.
Yeah, circles.
Well, they were hunted to extinction because of their super soft fur. That's how we get fursuits.
Uh huh.
They're fairly popular.
Which you would have learned if you'd been at the Megaplex fursuit construction panel.
The character of Rain is sort of the popular, the proto character, the protagonist, prototypical. I don't know. It was the first one that got popular, and you know, one of their defining racial characteristics is they have a prehensile clitoral hood. They can fuck you with their clit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sort of like a hyena? Is that, or is
I
that
guess.
Different?
I don't know.
I stopped keeping track.
Oh, archetypal.
Archetypal, there we go, yeah.
It was the word.
Basically, it's a fantasy species that people were like, that's cool, I'll make a character of one of them. And that's how circles are made.
Yes.
So that's answered. What the fuck is a circle?
Okay. That was one of the Tumblr anon.
Yep. Cool. Next one is titled Episode 260, Stupid Questions.
Oops. I went to the wrong email client on my phone. Episode 260, Stupid Questions. Okay. Dear Notcast, you asked for questions that we wouldn't normally ask for fear of sounding stupid. So here's my own little nugget of silly self-doubt. Does the condom go on the bottom's penis?
You both need to wear them.
Yes.
Just in case.
Yeah, and one on each finger. I have always been the one to end the romantic relationships that I'm in, from the first right through to the latest. I was always the one to break things off. Obviously, the circumstances and reasons for each breakup differed, and the lengths of the relationships varied from a few months to a year or more. But the fact remains that I have never been broken up with. I can't help but wonder, is that common?
I don't know.
It's like a 50-50. You're either going to be broken up with or... it might be. Hold on, let me read the rest of it, and then we can...
Yeah,
sorry.
We can derp our way through.
I completely just feel tired. Are there some people who are always on the delivering end of a breakup rather than the receiving end? People are tops or bottoms sometimes. People who are simply more forthright with their concerns or dissatisfaction with relationships and are quicker to take steps to remove themselves from those situations. Or does it perhaps point to some degree of callousness on my part? Anonymous by obligation, smiley face. I mean, I know that happens, and there are probably some reasons for it. I mean, some people might have commitment issues. Some people may just be impatient or less willing to compromise, so they just say fuck it, relationship over.
Yeah, fuck it, I'm out.
Relationship flip, you know, and walk away. You know, maybe a person that gets easily annoyed by a lot of just niggling little things.
It gets under their skin.
Yes, yes. Like a tuberculosis test. What?
I believe it's Mark.
Yes. Like a riding crop.
I don't really think that's too weird. I mean, you're probably more decisive when it comes to knowing what you want in a relationship.
I know what I want, not you.
Yeah, and... You know, that maybe you're a little callous in that regard, but it also
maybe
means
you're
more
decisive, too.
It also means you're not dragging it out.
Yeah, but you may want to, I mean, you know, I guess kind of good for you, you've never been dumped, but you may want to kind of review some of your past relationships and look at the reasons why you broke up with those people. And, you know, was it something that you could have worked on with them if you had put more time into it? I mean, were they really, like, hellacious reasons, like discovering one was, like, a kid fucker or something like that? You know, it was, like, a really justified reason?
He was Scottish.
He's a sheep shagger. Or is it like minor things, you know, like he doesn't do the dishes often enough or something like that, or, you know, just look the reasons why and, you know, kind of figure that out. Make a handy spreadsheet.
Yeah, I was going to say, make a spreadsheet.
Of all the people that you fucked and the positions and the dates. And then you use a little smiley face if you came, and a little sad face if you didn't, and a star if you came more than once.
And what's really good is that means, you know, the positions, you can just roll a d20 and find out what position you're going to do the next person you fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get enough input.
Yeah.
Right. So one more email and we're going to take a break.
Just don't mix up your sex dice with your anatomy dice, because then you get weird things like lick kidney. And, you know, that might not be good.
Yeah, I mean, you got to get the knives out, and it's just weird.
Yeah. You got to get your tongue in really deep. But it's okay to call it abdominal cavity, because there's lots of room in there.
Hey, Shiva.
You can crawl inside and wear your mate like a fursuit.
There's somebody masturbating to that right now.
Yeah, Hannibal Lecter.
Probably.
So, the next one is an anonymous Tumblr question.
He said, hey, Shiva.
Yes.
Hey, hey, hey.
Stay out of my show.
Been cleaning up my email. Let's see.
He's asking about butt sex.
Oh, no. Not butt sex. Sorry, I'm trying to find it. Mine's kind of out of order, and I don't know if I accidentally deleted
it. What's the date on it, Savern?
July 29th, 3:47 a.m.
Is it Tumblr 3 or Tumblr 2?
It's the one right after the stupid questions.
Okay, because that...
260. How about I just read it?
Okay.
Right. Yeah, because I think you might be looking at a different thing.
Okay,
Anonymous
asked a question.
Oh, I think she's got it.
No. Okay, I see. I thought I was expecting it to be a separate email.
Oh, this is the one about butt sex.
Okay.
Did you find it?
Yep.
Okay.
I was looking for it. I thought it would be separate. Why is anal sex appealing to most gay men? I understand that it stimulates the prostate, causing the physical pleasure, but despite being gay, I find the whole idea of the act, giving or receiving, incredibly unsanitary, no matter how... I'll make that expand... No matter how clean you make yourself. So, why is butt sex a thing for you guys?
Well, everybody's got one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's still a design feature of the penis to be inserted into somewhere warm and tight and slick, you know, and humped until you come. And... while that is a normal quote-unquote function for straight men, a lot of gay men want to do that too. So we stick it in the butt.
That's why we have things like condoms.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, anal douching and
stuff
like that. I mean, if it really squicks you out, there are gay dudes that just don't do butt sex.
Yeah, actually, not every gay couple does butt sex.
It's not that big a deal, really.
Butts also can look nice, you know, depending on what you're into. I mean, some people like smooth guys, some people like the hairy, manly guys. I mean, there's lots of different types out there. So butts don't necessarily have to be gross, you know. It's kind of like people, you know, people are like, ooh, how can gays put it in the butt? That's where poop comes out. Well, not all the time. You're not pooping while someone's penetrating you. Because, I mean, my comeback to that was like, yeah, blood and babies come out of the other hole. Well, the same thing. Not all the time.
Yeah.
You know?
But to be fair, those happen a lot less frequently, and they're generally a lot easier to clean up from.
Oh, I tell you, I know some baby mamas.
Dropping babies every week.
You know, it's every 28 days, and on my diet, that's the same. No, I'm kidding. Every 28 days, I literally shit a brick. I'm actually building an extension onto my house now with the bricks I've shit.
Oh, man.
No, not really.
So that's how we're redoing the patio.
Yes. It's just like, you know, I don't know, ancient Mayans building stuff out of adobe or something. The shit bricks. You know? They really stand up in the Texas heat.
I mean, yeah, it does feel good. Yeah, it can be messy. You take precautions and, you know.
You deal.
That's just... Sex is not always
there's pleasure usually for both parties. There's also, there's some people that, you know, unfortunately like me, that just I don't get much at all out of receiving. Like, I don't seem to have any kind of sensation back there. So I don't really enjoy being topped. So I tend to top other people. So receiving butt sex just may not be for you. You know, everyone's biology is a little bit different.
For me, I don't have a prostate, so I don't enjoy it as much as some dudes. But there are some girls that really, really enjoy it.
And what I have read of the reason is that apparently, for some women at least, there are some very deep nerves that are actually like on the back of the vagina that can't really be reached from vaginal penetration, but can be stimulated through anal penetration.
I can see that.
And if you're a woman where those nerves can actually be
and work
sexually pleasured, then yeah, some guys and some girls would really enjoy, you know, being butt sexed.
So there you go.
Yep.
There was one more question in this combination email. We should probably do that so we can.
So I guess yours like combined all the Tumblr ones into one big one.
Looks like it may have done that.
I think it's like within a certain time period.
You're also, you have a different male client as well, I think.
Yeah, that's probably it.
All right, well, it's the third one.
Okay.
Okay. Why is having such a big deal to some people? I was 21 before I lost my virginity, and between 18 and then, I never really worried about it at all. Why do some people act as though as not having been with someone sexually is the end of the world? I don't know.
Yeah. Basically, you have the weird dichotomy of, like, dudes need to bed chicks to be seen as manly, but chicks that have sex are sluts.
So I don't know who these dudes are supposed to be banging.
Each other. Totally.
Yeah, it's only gay if the balls touch.
Yeah.
It's okay if you're on top.
So, like, it really does boil down to, like, for a lot of people, self-validation. Oh, I'm a manly enough man. I fucked a chick all year.
Yeah, and of course, half the time people are bragging, and
yeah,
you know, the closest they got to pussy was when they were born.
Yeah, and like I was like 21 when I lost my
I was 23.
You know, we can get all Erica Moen and be like, "What kinds of virginity are there? Handjob virginity, blowjob virginity."
I love that.
Yeah, that whole bit was fun.
And the bit when they were talking about the recent Ojoy sex toy on Penny Arcade, that was pretty funny too.
I haven't seen that yet. I'm a little behind on the webcomics.
Just some people see a lot of self-validation in that.
Yeah,
there are people that are like, the moment they turn 18, they need a dick in their ass. I mean, I think that's really silly. I'm personally, you know, I got a pretty decent sex drive now, but I'm not all like, gotta get fucked or gotta fuck.
Mm-hmm.
I don't derive self-validation from that.
Right,
but when you're younger, young, dumb, and full of cum, maybe you do.
Yeah. You're also, most people, particularly guys, are really driven by their hormones when they're in their teenage years. And, I mean, what's that whole thing about men hit their sexual peak at, like, 18, and women it's, like, 40 or something like that, or close to it? At least that was the stat years and years ago. I don't know if further research has been done since then that's changed that estimation, but
I don't know.
You know, it's just basically guys are young and horny, and there's a lot of male ego in bragging about scoring and banging and stuff like that is something that teenage boys do. It's only as important to you as you make it out to be. You know, it's whatever. I wouldn't put too much pressure on yourself to lose your virginity at, well, you already did, but I mean, to anybody, to lose a virginity at a particular point. There's, I mean, you know, short of some kind of sexual assault, I don't think there's really a wrong way to lose your virginity, you know. Most people's first times are going to be kind of fumbling and awkward anyway, so, yeah, it's not. Some people think, like, that the sun is going to blaze in the sky and doves angels are going to fly and shit like that, and it's like, no. It's just a thing people do.
It's going to be awkward and weird because you're doing stuff with another person for the first time, and it's going to be awkward, and you're both going to feel embarrassed at the end. Congratulations. That was round one.
Well, sometimes you feel embarrassed, and sometimes it's still fun enough to, hey, let's try that again.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, but
sometimes you're awkward at the beginning, and then you're like, oh, yeah, it's totally working.
Oh, I figured it out. I do this and this. And then I stick my fist up and then wave you around like a puppet.
And now I'm on the puppet show. Yay!
So we're going to take a break now. It's now past an hour mark. And we'll be back.
Okay.
All right.
This week on AdamandEve.com, we're going to do something for the ladies. I'm sorry, this is probably not a good idea to put in your butt. I mean, you can try, but it's a wild G-spot vibrator, a.k.a. a rabbit vibrator. So it is pink. It looks like it's supposed to be a rabbit. It looks kind of like a platypus to me. Regardless, it's got a little thing to tickle your clit on the top. So it's got 1,137 reviews. Out of those reviews, it's got 4.5 stars. So I would say that probably reliably this will be nice to put in your vag. You know, I'm just saying. Sometimes we review stuff that looks fun. This one looks like it's got some votes to back up the, hey, this thing looks cool.
This is fun for your vagina.
So they've got two colors, purple and pink. So you can pick whatever color you want to stick in your junk. It is $69.95, so it's not cheap, but a lot of rabbit vibes don't tend to be cheap because there's a lot of...
There's a bit more to them.
There's a bit more to them. It's not a little bit more than a butt plug or something simple. There's moving parts. Yeah, what have you. So a little bit of information. It's three fast vibrating stimulators that focus on your clit. It's got a curved design to fit up in your G-spot. It's got spinning metal beads to create a stimulating massage, so it's kind of...
It's got spinning metal bits.
Yeah, I think they're in a sleeve. Let's see, it's waterproof, so you can shower or pool. Let's see, it's made from TPE, a jelly-like material. Measures 1.5 inches wide and 4 inches long. Insertable, of course, because, you know, it's a rabbit vibe. Takes 3 AA batteries. You have to buy them separately. This thing is $70, but when you come to us, we've got a coupon code that helps cut that in half. It's K-N-O-T, not. And if you put it in your cart on Adam and Eve, you can get half off an item. It includes this one. It doesn't include all the super fancy vibrators, so this is actually fairly notable. This one does cut it in half. So instead of paying $70 for this, you're going to pay $34.95. $98. And it's going to knock off $8 in shipping. So it's a pretty nice chunk off your order. So, you know, coupon code not. We get a cut of the profits. We use it to buy, like, show equipment and things like that.
Yep.
So there you go. That's this week's Adam and Eve.
All right. So Fuzz was not feeling well, and he's bailed on us. That's all right. He has a...
Skype is calling your name.
Yes, he has a...
Ear
infection. So why don't you read an email while I silence my computer?
We're professionals.
Maximum professional.
Uh-huh. Let's see. Actually, here's one from Jeeves that we didn't read. Oh, wait, hold on. No, that was last week. My mistake. All right, a couple more tumblers. How many dicks do I have to suck before I get those horrible dick-sucking teeth? I don't know.
You have to do a lot of meth.
Yes.
So don't do that, kids.
So does SETI rend out your ears from time to time? And he'd also like to hear more from Q and Avery. And he thinks they add a certain je ne sais quoi.
They do indeed.
Like when you have a fine red wine selection, and at the end there's the purple drink.
Yes, Q is our dessert porter.
We'll tell him you said that. He has a certain je ne sais quoi. So those are two quick tumblers.
Yeah, horrible dick-sucking teeth is just not a good thing. Yeah, just don't do meth. That's what happens. See, here's the next one. Oh, goodness. You wanted silly questions. Okay. Can Shiva or any of the cast matters say pneumono ultramiscopic silica volcano clonosis?
Apparently we can try.
Pneumono ultramiscopic silica volcano clonosis. So it has something to do with silica exposure related to volcanoes, I guess? Okay, I tried. I danced.
Okay, let's see. Oh, we got another tumbler here. Let's see. My fox is being evil and possessed, summoning the Dark Lord through ejaculation and chanting the prophecies of doom to wolves in the coming age. How do I reason with him to have mercy on me before calling for an exorcism? Buy him chocolate.
It's okay. Generally, foxes, when they get into this mode, they just need to be put into their place.
And reset.
Yes,
thoroughly.
And reset.
Lots and lots of resets.
You know, as a fox, I know that sometimes I just need to have a good reset, and that'll get you back to normal.
Reset until your eyes crossed.
Yep. Huh.
So there's another Tumblr one up the...
Yep. Let's see. In regards to the gun safety / responsibility talk a few episodes ago, what would you think about having a gun that isn't loaded? It can still be used as a threat, but it can't be used to actually hurt anyone, and should it forcibly be taken from you? Thoughts?
I feel a lot more secure within my house if there was no ammo, but there's always the fact that if someone got in, rifled through my shit, or broke in while I was there and took it from me, they can then run off and use it on somebody else once they acquire ammo.
Nefarious means.
You know, so I'd be a lot less worried about it if I knew that there wasn't a single drop of ammo anywhere around, and they happen to have a certain caliber bullet in their pocket is incredibly low. So, yeah. I would be okay with that.
I guess. But, I mean, basically having it means that people could steal it.
Yeah. It would ratchet my concern down a great deal, which I guess means just buy ammo when you are going to go out and use it and don't bring any home.
Or keep it separate.
It'd have to be separate, like, you know, hidden in a different part of the apartment type deal.
I don't know.
So, yeah. That's my personal thing.
If you're going to have a weapon at home anyway, it should probably be a handgun or a shotgun, not an AR-15.
Yeah. Okay, so that, I think, wipes out all of our tumblers for the week.
Yup. Let's see. There's one from Kylie, which is not, in fact, anonymous, but she asks a good question. And it's something that we have been wanting to discuss.
Okay. All right. Do you want to read it?
Okay. I heard you need a trans. This is what she wrote. Hey, Notcast. On your recent episode 257, you were talking about trans issues and mentioned you'd like having a trans person discuss the issue. Well, I'm not local, so I can't exactly pop in, but I'm plenty comfortable talking about it. First and foremost, I love the advice you gave. It's perfect general advice and makes emphasis on asking the person in question about their preferences. I've been actively male or female, or DMB as I just learned as a term, designated male at birth, transgender for the last 4 or so years, and have not yet started hormone therapy or any other such thing, as I still live with my parents, and they're under enough stress trying to change their lives to fit in a newly adopted daughter. I don't want to add to that. So they... You and an extra daughter. Okay. Of course, I prefer and enjoy it when people use female pronouns to talk to me, but from the very beginning, I've always said that I prefer you if you use female pronouns for me. I'd prefer if you use female pronouns for me, but I completely understand if you don't. Personally, I understand how difficult it is to change your mindset about how this person you've known for years is now another gender, especially in a society where that is an important factor, and especially when you don't present as such IRL yet. This essentially eliminates all the social awkwardness of it, and it lets me dress feminine when I went alone for those with those friends I trust. Most of my life as a female has been online, where I present fully as female and only very rarely let people know I wasn't born such. It's actually amazing how differently people treat me when they think I'm female, or especially when they misread my name as Kyle and think I'm a guy, how much more harshly they treat me. I'd love to answer any particular questions in future emails or even Skype in if you would prefer a more immediate conversation. Your trans girl, Pango from Georgia, Kylie Rowe.
We haven't done very many remote guests.
We just need to figure it out. It's not hard.
I know.
It's just a matter of getting the audio from the Skype call into our monitors and then back into the stream. Because, yeah, we'd like to have you on. We have people that are, like, remote. They're like, yeah, I'd like to come on.
But getting there, unless it's fiesta time, and then it's like, oh, party, 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 gone, gone, gone.
Yeah, it's just a matter of figuring it out. If we do get translated questions and we answer them, please feel free to write in and let us know if we are off base or give us your view of things, because that's not a field of expertise that we have. So
at least not first general. We may have friends and we may be socially aware, but we ourselves are
like
not.
I know several trans people. I'm friends with several trans people.
I've not been through.
None of them are anywhere near here. They're all on the coasts. What a surprise.
Okay.
Trans people have a rough go of it in Texas. What a surprise.
All right, so, let's see. Okay, well, here's one. I've got to count four left.
Okay, let's plow through these.
Okay. So, my job is trying to kill me. So I was wrong. My job is not to inspect packaging. It's to pull heavy racks off an overhead conveyor thingy. Two things. One, I have never been a lifter. I've got scrawny arms. I was a runner. I also have moderate spinal damage from improper restraint methods in a group home. They were shut down after said methods killed the client. Long and short of this, job hurts. I expected that. It isn't my primary concern. I'm strong enough to do the job. Barely strong enough. Two, I've now been working for a week. I have five work days. In 5 work days, I've had one asthma attack every day, but all but one were solved by an inhaler. I got sent to the hospital. This would have been fine, except for the fact that I got 3 points in my first 90 days. If I leave halfway through the day, I get a point, which means if I have 5 more severe attacks on the floor, I get fired. It is a constant 95-plus degrees on the floor. No water bottles are allowed. My asthma is exercise-induced and triggered by heat. And I'm allowed to change jobs for 6 months. Surviving the job for 90 days here is almost guaranteed to land you any entry-level job around here. Everyone knows that the place is hell. I want to get a new job, but a week of does not experience make any advice. Before my job literally kills me, and since this is continuing on, Legion Bunny. Let's see. Damn. Well,
damn,
this was
sucks.
Sent back on July 29th, so he's had 2 weeks to go with it, and hopefully he's still be able to travel
alive. I mean, one of the good things, I guess, of working a job like that is, hey, you get a lot stronger. The unfortunate side effect is that in the meantime, you probably risk hurting yourself. As you mentioned in the email, you do have some spine damage, which really sucks. I really hope that you have a belt. You know, most places require you to, especially if you're lifting heavy things.
I mean, that sounds like it sucks. It sounds like the asthma is more of the concern, though.
Yeah. Are you on any additional asthma medications? I know that I have pretty bad asthma. It's gotten a lot better since I've lost a lot of weight, but it's still exercise and heat related, too. So, like, I have to be real careful during the summer times, and I live in Texas. But I also take Advair and Singular, both of which have generic Singular has generic versions that you can get for $4 if you get a prescription. But Advair does not have a generic.
I don't know if you could try to get Singular, but...
If you have a doctor, if you have a GP, if you have a cash clinic that's local and you can get a prescription from, have them give you some, like, Singular.
It's more than an inhaler. Then what inhaler is usually secondary to that, a rescue.
Yeah, a rescue inhaler is a rescue inhaler. It's designed to stop the contraction of the alveoli in the lungs. Basically open you up. But the singular, like, I'm not sure exactly what its method, how it works exactly, but it makes it harder for your body to have an asthma attack.
Yep. My niece is on that.
Yep. I take that in Advair, and I don't have an asthma problem at all. I used to go from, like, 3 to 4 weeks in an inhaler to a couple months, several months in an inhaler.
Okay.
Which means I have a stockpile of them because I'm allotted 1 a month for my insurance. And I'm like, once a month, I get a new inhaler and I add it to the stockpile just in case.
All right, next.
Okay, so I guess this one's mine.
Mm-hmm. One more each. Well, two for you and one for me.
Yep. Something different. So here is something LGBTQ happening in British Columbia, Canada. The image attached to the story in my provincial newspaper. I thought you might like to hear about it. The province. Salgado, it's not just a piece of paper. Harriet Cunningham, 11, is among the first British Columbians to redesignate their gender on their birth certificates. So, apparently, I'm going to guess, because I'm... doesn't... It's like, I guess the province is in the email. It is allowing younger people, younger kids, to basically change their gender on their birth certificate if they are trans at a younger age. Okay. Cool. The youngest person in the world to ever go through like gender reassignment surgery was a German male to female trans person, and they turned out looking pretty good. Turns out if you get there before puberty starts, you can end up looking really feminine. What a surprise. So, that's kind of cool. I mean, I'm sure there are, you know, there are hurdles that they have to go through, but, you know, the fact that the government is like, all right, yeah, sure, is a good step forward. I mean, people being transgender is not common at all, but for the people that are, the government making it not a massive pain in the ass for them is a good thing.
Yes.
So, kudos to them.
All right. Well, actually, I didn't have that in my list. Let's see. Shorter question. Howdy, Notcasters. I want to say sorry for the novel I sent you last time I wrote in, and thank you for your help. You didn't get around to reading my email, but some advice that you gave in the same episode was helpful to my situation. I do have another question, however. I've been having issues with a friend of mine. Let's call him A. A has a crush on me for 5 months. A always showed respect for my relationship and my partner, but I could tell how he felt since A always wore his heart on his sleeve. I had a small crush on A at this time, so I started talking to him less and less, hoping that both crushes would fade in time. A took it well, and we were able to reconnect a few months later. I had lingering attachment to A, but I felt comfortable being friends with him since he showed no desire to be with me. Our friendship grew stronger after we began talking again, progressing to the point where A was the person I turned to it for advice and support when my ex left me. He put up with his fair share of my breakdowns and overall mopey behavior, cheering me up and making sure I was handling the breakup in a healthy way. He even tried to convince my ex to talk to me so I could have the closure I never had a chance to get. This did not help my feelings fade, and it soon became apparent that A had only been hiding his own feelings toward me. After I had a chance to talk to my ex and felt myself start to move forward, he started becoming more affectionate and has not let up for this past month. This week, he began to behave in more suggestive and flirtatious ways. I don't know how to deal with it. I'm not ready for anything related to romance, and I won't be for a very, very long time. At the same time, I care for A and all that he's done for me. What should I do? Anonymous. So you had a bad breakup. You're not ready for love, but you've got someone who
has been carrying the torch for you.
Yeah.
First of all, A seems like a pretty cool friend. But A also needs to learn to respect your boundaries. So, this is a situation where, personally, I would say to the guy, I would say to A, look, I know you like me. I really appreciate all you've done. But I'm not ready for a relationship again. And he should respect that. And if he doesn't respect that, then maybe he's not as cool a friend as I thought. But you just need to be upfront with him. Because, yeah, you had a breakup. And it's been, like, what, a month? Month and a half? 2 months, maybe? That's, you know, anything in that time frame, that's a rebound. You don't want that shit. Especially with someone who does seem to have, you know, like, legit romantic aims for you.
Just tell him to go slow.
Yeah, I mean, there was absolutely nothing wrong with taking an extended period of time after a bad breakup to figure yourself out again. That's fine. That's normal. So just be upfront with A and say, look, I'm not ready for a serious relationship. I like you. You're great. You're a good friend. But can't be more than that until I figure this shit out for myself.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What do you say?
I pretty much agree.
Cool.
There's not really much more to say. You've got to take it as you can take it. So, and two more.
Yep.
Dear Notcasters, I have a semi-serious question that I'd like advice on. I'm 19, nearly 20, year old, sophomore in college, all paid for by scholarship, knock on wood. As someone who's part of the young, dumb, and full of cum age group, I would like to know what you think what is most important to get out of the way before I get too old. I'm aware of the need to save money and have already invested a substantial sum of over $2,500 in reputable mutual fund. This will help me pocket some cash by the time I graduate, but what I'm interested in are some of the finer bits of knowledge about the game of life that you've gained over the years. Stuff that may not seem big, but make a serious impact and should either be avoided or aimed for. Best wishes to the entire crew, Nilo Malik. P.S. Yeah, no, you didn't set off the grammar Nazi. If I could say anything for that age, travel. Go, if you can afford it, or you can get programs to do it, travel. Go around the U.S., see different things. That age, you can spend a lot of time maybe couch surfing. If you got a friend if you're on the East Coast and you got a friend out in Cali, and you can afford to take off for 2 weeks, go couch surf for a week, see another part of the country. If you can get into a program overseas for a summer or something, go do it. You know, go over to England, go here, hither and yon. See the world, at least before you get tied down with a job and bills and whatever else. You know, explore. Use this time to look around you, find you stuff that you like to do. Just, you know, if you turn over any kind of rock and see what crawls out.
Yeah, and it's really great that you're getting scholarships. That's really good. Just be aware that those have performance requirements associated with them.
Don't fuck them up.
Don't fuck it up, because then you're on the hook for everything if you do. So, you know.
Yeah, you don't.
Know, college is great, and college is parties, but especially when you're on a scholarship and not on daddy's money, you really need to make sure that your academic behavior is up to snuff.
Because
and that doesn't sound fun, but that also means you're not going to necessarily be saddled with massive amounts of debt once you're done.
Because when you just, and I say this from experience, if you can do what you can do to avoid the massive debt that is college, you will come out of that so much ahead. Because, and here's the best way to put it. You leave high school, you get an entry-level job. Okay, you make crap money, and gradually you crawl your way up. But if you go out to college, and you spend all these years and money getting a degree, then you usually start out of college getting a better job. And you get paid more, but then you have all the bills that basically kind of equalizes your pay down to the crap that you started with. So if you can come out of college with all your bills paid and nothing hanging on your neck, that means that you can get a good job coming out of college, and you will be light years ahead everybody else coming out of it with you is saddled with basically that albatross of debt. So,
and that's why Panther and I are doing so well. We don't have any debt.
So yeah, don't do whatever you can to avoid having the debt around your neck, because you will, I mean, then you're not trying to pay it off and pay for a car and pay for a house and pay for this and pay for that.
And a partner and kids, possibly, and.
It'll just be that much stress for the rest of your adult life. Because you're typically paying off college loans, depending on how much you take, for 15 to 20 years. And if you can eliminate that stress, oh my God, by all means.
You'll be a million miles ahead.
Yes.
So there's that. Other than that, just, you know, focus on your education. Don't fuck up the scholarships and see the world. That's pretty much...
Yeah.
That sounds good to me.
Yeah, use this time to explore. I mean, that was the years when I was bouncing around from friend's house to friend's house, and I was visiting Boston and Indiana and all over. So, yeah.
So, yeah, there you go. Hope that's useful. And next week you can write in about college tips. Yeah, that sounds good.
All right.
How to survive college. That'll be episode 261. So last email. Dependent friend. Dear Notcast, I have an online friend. Let's call her Jay.
You know.
Jay and I have known each other for several years now. We've gone from friends to friends with benefits, to lovers to mates, then back to friends with benefits now. All this has been strictly online only. What has me worried is Jay is that since... Okay, what has me worried about Jay is that I've since moved on. I've got a real-life girlfriend, furry-friendly, but not furry herself, and things are fairly serious between us. Our all-girlfriend is fine with whatever escapades we get up to online, as long as I stay online, and that's not an issue here. Jay, however, doesn't seem to have moved on. Jay has confessed to me that she hasn't been able to find or connect to anyone that she feels the same way about that she does to me. I'm kind of wondering whether she's really trying to find someone else. She's had bad relationships in the past before me, including one boyfriend who hung himself mid-relationship. To make matters worse, she was the one who found the body. And she told me several times I'm the best thing that has happened to her. If the only concern here were my feelings, I'd be fine with the situation. It's fun doing things with her, and she's a friend I've known for years and don't want to give up. She's a little bit clingy, but it's bearable. What has me concerned are her feelings, since I don't have as much time and attention for her as she seems to want, and she hasn't tried to find anyone to fill the hole in her life. I left, even though it seems to me that she dearly needs it. I've tried talking all this through with her several times, and we haven't really gotten anywhere with it. I've thought about it if it would be best to try breaking things off with her for her own good, but I'm worried that leaving her would hurt her worse than staying would. The conclusion I've reached is that ultimately I can only be responsible for my own happiness in situations like this, and if she does need to break things off with me in order to move on, then that can't be done cleanly until she decides that for herself. I'd like your advice on this and what I should do. Thanks, Anonymous.
Well, it may be like a course of slowly weaning her off you. You know, talk to her for a little bit and, oh, hey, I gotta go. And slowly kind of build this up over time. Just, I hate to do this, but sometimes it's a matter of kind of slipping away without crushing them.
Yeah, because cutting her off cold turkey is going to be bad end. And that, I mean, you do that to anybody, it's going to be a bad end, not just this girl, but it is unfortunate that she has gotten so attached, even though it was an online only. But the thing is, in this magical time where, you know, we can talk to people across the world in seconds, that, you know, online is just as real to a lot of people as the real world.
And you may want to stop being friends with benefits online.
Yeah.
Stop the e-fucking. Stop the e-cuddling. Start just talking about movies and video games and, you know, stop being that kind of affectionate. And, again, and step that off slowly or...
Yeah.
You know.
Don't cold turkey this shit. Don't just be like, sorry, bitch. The e-dick is gone. I am a Ken doll now. That would just be weird. But
I mean, you could always do something like your girlfriend's not cool with this. I mean,
yeah, and that's a perfectly reasonable. The fact that your actual RL girlfriend is cool with it is kind of impressive, honestly.
I am, and other people that I've been with, with the exception of my now ex, have always been. It's like whatever. It's like writing interactive.
Well, okay, so I'm gonna be a dude and be like, dudes are a lot less.
You mean girlfriends are usually not less with you fucking online.
Yeah, I'm going to say women are not, I'm going to guess, as friendly to that, or as dudes are like, whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't know, I'm not a chick. I'm just going to say that.
I think it depends on the gal. And I've seen guys be... I think it just depends on personality type.
That's true. I mean...
And how... What kind of...
shenanigans you're getting up to.
Yeah, what kind of shenanigans and how much importance you put on that kind of stuff.
Don't be sending dick pics.
You know, I don't care if they send dick pics. Heck, Sarah does it all the time.
Really?
Well, to only select people, but yeah. I've helped him take them. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tricky situation, but the weaning off is probably the best.
Yes. Or at least start slowly building barriers of, you know. So, but I would, you know, maybe if you can get to where you can just talk to her and be friends with her, at, you know, and you can reach that level of, yeah, we're not fucking anymore, but we can still talk about stuff.
Yeah.
Like movies.
Okay. Well, that's sounds good to me.
One last nerdy thing, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh,
I know
yes.
You saw it. Fuzz had not. Oh, my God. And the thing is Rocket Raccoon, yeah, he's okay, but he's... I mean, he's as good as all the other characters. I like them all. Gamora was a little flat, but I... Ooga, chaka, ooga. That, I love that opening scene. You know, I just love the entire movie from start to finish.
It was great. I mean, it was a big gamble on Marvel's part. They're taking their D-lister Marvel Cosmic, and they're like, let's do this. Why the fuck not?
Mm-hmm.
If it hadn't been good, they wouldn't have had to do anything with it. Well, they would have mucked up their Infinity War, Infinity Gauntlet thing coming up. But
still, I mean, they were funny. There was good CGI.
You know, it was very relatable characters. They're not these paragons of virtue. They're a bunch of a-holes, but they're not 100% dicks.
Mm-hmm. And they did animate Rocket really goddamn well.
Oh, yeah. There's all sorts of fantastic, cutesy raccoon art now.
See, I bounce around. I really like Rocket, too. I really like Peter, Star-Lord Peter. I really like Groot. I really like Drax. And Gamora's like, eh. But I keep bouncing between which is my favorite, but they all have various...
They'll have their good moments.
Yeah.
It's cool that they're going to they're obviously going to make another one.
Mm-hmm. Because it was fucking fantastic.
Oh, and it made tons of money. I mean, yeah, it has lots of CG and stuff, but it's, you know, it was a huge risk that paid off.
I mean, and like you said, they took D-list comic, I mean, way down the chain of importance.
What's really interesting is that in Marvel's Capcom 3, when they went from regular to ultimate,
mm-hmm.
their initial plan was to eke out DLC characters $5 at a time
mm-hmm.
for, like, the extra 16 they added.
Yeah.
And then when they had the Fukushima earthquake and their all shit got fucked up, they decided to say fuck it, and they released Ultimate, which had all the DLC characters on the disc. And the Marvel characters they added were Doctor Strange,
mm-hmm.
which he's getting his movie, Nova and Rocket Raccoon, which... Nova was in Guardians.
Mm-hmm.
Rocket, obviously.
Nova was?
Yeah, she's in one of the scenes with the Nova Corps.
She or he?
He.
Ah.
Nova Prime is not Nova.
Mm.
Nova is...
Yeah.
A comic, is a character who's not related to the star. See, who else did they add?
Here's what I look back. See, one of the first comics I started collecting was New Warriors, which included Nova. Nova relates back through all this, and I also read the original Guardians of the Galaxy, which is looped back to New Warriors because of what Captain Marvel? Captain something from New Warriors is this Vance Astro from an alternate timeline than Guardians of the Galaxy. So,
okay.
So when they came out with Guardians of the Galaxy, I was like, wow, that's digging deep from back in the 90s, and I looked at the lineup and said, who the fuck are these people?
Well, it's like the collector is like an elder of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like not even touched upon in the movie itself. People are like, oh, this character is this.
Mm-hmm.
And so like the elders of the universe may show up and deal with Thanos. And also, Thanos looked really fucking Thanos.
Yes, he did.
Like, they did a really, really good CG representation of what Thanos would look like.
And Nebula.
Based off the comic.
Nebula looked really fantastic, too.
Yeah, even if she was looking for her doctor. and she'll be back.
Of course. I mean, she didn't die.
Nope. She chopped her own
ripped
her own hand off and landed on a ship and stole it and flew away.
Yeah.
So, obviously, she'll be back. But she's also a daughter of Thanos, so she'll be an antagonist in a future film. So, it's cool. Fuck Ninja Turtles. Michael Bay can go to hell.
I really wanted to see that, but I've heard such horrible things about it.
The unfortunate thing is that, well, they made a lot of money, so there's going to be another one. And Michael Bay's reign of terror will not end.
Of raping my childhood. I mean, I will see him, but probably in the dollar...
Coming soon, Michael Bay's My Little Pony. Explosions.
I mean, I'll probably see it in the dollar theater. Like I said, it's my gateway drug, but I don't think I'm going to pay $15 to see it.
Michael Bay's Ghostbusters 4.
They do have a sequel lined up.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, well.
Shit, what other toy line could he bastardize? Michael Bay's...
Inhumanoids.
Masters of the Universe.
Oh, you know he'll fucking do He-Man if he can lay his dirty paws on it.
And Skeletor will be some, like, CG thing. You know what you're doing?
Yeah. He-Man, it's done for the last time. Comes.
Again.
Come, whatever. I don't know.
Then Orko would do shit. I don't know.
Yes. Well, they've already made the horrible He-Man movie that wasn't really He-Man, so...
There was Masters of the Universe back in the late 80s.
That's what... With Dolph Lundgren.
Dolph Lundgren.
So they've already raped it once. The corpse is still twitching. They may be able to get another round out of it.
Jeez.
I mean, I'm just saying.
And they've already done G.I. Joe. They did Battleship.
Michael Bay shoots at ladders.
They did Rocky Socket Robot. Granted, that did kind of look cool when they did it, so.
Yeah, that was Disney, though.
Did they do it?
It was Real Steel.
Yeah.
The Hugh Jackman boxing robots movie.
I mean, to be fair, it was kind of a neat thing, but yeah. So.
It's like, what can they do next?
They'll figure something out.
So, yeah, I think next week we'll do, like, college survival tips.
So.
That'll be next week's topic, episode 261, right in at notcast@foxstuffers.com.
So, do you have anything that you helped you get through the college years? Any tips, any tricks? Any way to white-knuckle it through, send it to us?
Yep.
Or any stories about surviving college would also be good.
Crazy-ass weekends that you shouldn't have made it out in one piece, and yet you did. Don't try this at home, kids.
Yes, do not set the dorms on fire.
So, on that note...
Good night.
And big balls.